All my assistant was checking my teeth, make sure I
had. Oh, I thought you were telling me I had something there. I was like, I haven't had any tobacco.
No. He thought I was telling him he had something in his teeth. I'm like, I was checking my
teeth. I was going like, wait, did I have a chew this morning? I still got things that, no, I didn't have a chew yet today. That's a bad day. It's 12:11. I haven't had any tobacco yet. That's a bummer.
Oh, well. I cannot wait to be with y'all, man. at Man Camp, bro, we're going to have so much fun.
Heck yeah, we are. It's going to be phenomenal.
We are going to have so much fun. I already feel it.
Welcome to The Aggressive Life. A few months ago, I ran into a guy on a stage. It was a concert, a Christian worship concert. And the promoter said to me, they said, hey, we got this one woman coming, Lauren Daigle. She's a pretty big deal. And we're trying to get some more people, some younger people. What do you think? And I said, well, you know, Maverick City is who I like. I'm not very young, but Maverick City is who I listen to a lot in terms of worship, and a lot of youngsters do. And the promoters said, oh, Maverick City, huh? Well, okay. So they looked into them, they booked them, and they came. And since my day job, Crossroads sponsored the whole event, we had stuff all over the stadium, and I got to be on stage for a little bit and all that kind of stuff. And I'm waiting backstage to come forth and give a little introduction. And the band from Maverick City starts coming out, and I see one of the lead singers. I'm like, oh man, there he is. I love that guy, Chandler Moore. What a good guy.
I'm about to say, tell them what you called me first song.
I called you Chandler. I saw you backstage, and you said what? You said,
I said, no, I'm Dante. You said, oh my God.
Oh,
yes,
I'm so white. I am so white. I can't even tell people apart. It was horrible.
Well, a lot of people do that. Get us mixed up, but it's all good.
So you heard right. You heard from, we've become pretty good friends since then. I use a friend term. We're not spending a lot of time together, but we're going to spend a lot of time together. We've had some talks. Dante Bo, big deal. He's been in the Grammy conversation. He has had a lot of ups and downs in his life. I had a conversation with him after that. I said, hey, man, would you consider coming and being a part of Man Camp, being part of the worship team? And he said, yes. So he, first time we've ever had an outside person coming doing outside, I mean, different from our normal stuff.
You don't know
stuff.
This, though. Can I tell you something that you don't know?
Yeah.
Even though we've talked, you know, on the phone and we've texted, I never told you this.
Yeah.
When I went to the Daigle concert and we were singing Maverick, we didn't know what exactly the details were 100%, but we knew it was a big concert at Lauren Day. We knew like certain things. But when I met you, I said, I'm going to do something with him.
Really?
Because it was such a amazing worship set. Like, I just felt like the atmosphere was really nice. And I'm like, I'm going to do something with him. I didn't know if I would this year or next year, but I'm like, I know God's going to make something happen. I never told you that, but I promise. I thought that, and I told my assistant at the time I'm going to do something with him. Yeah.
Wow. Anyway. That's fantastic. Well, take us back to the beginning, Dante, because you've got a job, career path, calling, whatever you want to call it, that's different than the average person. There's not a lot of people who do what you do. So worship leadership, how did that start? When did you start seeing the little seedlings in your life, this is going to be a thing for you?
I was born into the church, if that makes sense. My grandparents on both sides were pastors. And we were in the country, and so pretty much everybody in the town went to the church. And I always loved going because it felt like not just community, because I didn't have that language at the time, but my friends were there. And I thought church was always the coolest place to go because all my friends were there and their parents were there. Some, when my parents were there, it was just, everybody just liked each other and loved each other. And I fell in love with it, and I always loved it since I was a little boy. And so when it came to worship leading, I sang for my grandma for the first time when I was about 10 years old.
Sang for, like in church or just in the living room or
at
what?
At the house.
Okay.
At the house. Huh. And she was like, you can sing. And so then she called all of my aunts and uncles and stuff. She's like, sing that song, sing the same song. She's like, all right, hang up. She's like, all right, call, let me call your aunt. She's like, sing the same song. And like, I was singing it like six times that day. And I knew then that I was going to use my voice for Jesus. I knew then just because of my upbringing. Like I said, I was raised in the church. So I already knew that I wanted to sing Christian music, you know, and I did other stuff like as a teenager, like tried to do like love songs and stuff. And they're good songs, but I knew that like I was called to lead worship. And I would say that's kind of the beginning of how I got into worship is just singing for my grandmother and knowing that she's going to pretty much, she did just help me and coached me and led me to the church. Like you using their gift for God.
Yeah.
And I want to say it was the next Sunday. The pastor was calling me up. My grandfather called me up to do a solo. I think I started singing a solo the next Sunday. And so I knew pretty early on.
And what was the path from that to, you know, being a big deal? Like Maverick City, boom, Dante, boom, he's got all this stuff. But what were the in-between steps between there and to where many people may know you and your work?
Yeah, that's a good question. Because a lot of people don't know this.
Yeah.
I actually saw someone, you know, you have critics online that just like criticizing stuff. And I saw someone like say, I don't like this. these worship teams, like just naming a bunch of different worship teams. And they were like, because I don't want the person that sleep on the floor. I want the person that goes to the nations and does missionary work. I want the person that doesn't just take money for everything. And it's so funny, like I went to, out of high school, straight to Eddie James Ministry. So it's a ministry school. And I was there for 6 years, 3 years just in the program and 3 years as a leader of the rehabilitation program. Hmm. So I led the rehab and I've never been addicted to drugs in my life. Like I've never, wow. You know, like the certain girls came out of prostitution and different things like that. I don't even know if I can I say that, but yeah.
Can you say prostitution?
Dude, you never know.
You are too sheltered in the Christian catacomb bubble. Dude, can you say that?
They get me, bro. They be getting
turning
me.
Tricks. Can you say spreading their legs for, right. Can you say someone right. taking right. the skin boat to Tuna Town? I mean, what are you talking about? Yes.
So I was a part of that and I was very instrumental in
that. By the way, I'm sorry. I just had that last on sequitur. It was really out there. I just watched Grumpy Old Men. For like I haven't seen it for years yet. Liv and I just watched it with Walter Matthau and Jack Lemmon and Ann Margaret. It's an old, old movie. And we watched it mainly for the outtakes. The very, very end is Burgess Meredith, the trainer from Rocky, going on and on and on, and hitting all these one-liners. Like, looks like Chuck's be. I'm not going to give all right now. I don't even want to. What?
You're crazy.
It's good. Well, see, you're still with me. That means you're right for man camp. That's good. So anyway,
I'm still with you.
Go
I'm
back to
right for man camp. You
the
are
P
so
word.
Funny.
The P word. We can't
the
say
the P word.
Yeah, go back to yeah.
But yeah, so I was instrumental in just leading them. You know, I mean, we had a different leaders for different things, but I was over the program in general for that season and over the worship team as well. And so my journey from my in-between journey from just being, you know, a local guy to Maverick City or Bethel, it happened with me traveling as a missionary all over the world. I traveled all over the world and I slept on church floors. I led the worship team in the ministry for free until they offered to give me money and it was a little bit of money, but I'm really grateful for it. And would start writing songs. You know, I always was a songwriter kind of, cause I would like teeter totter. Like I was like trying to do little stuff, but in the ministry I would actually write and finish full songs And I would teach my worship team, who's like Aaron Moses of Maverick City and Joel Barnes with Elevation Worship. Like this was my local worship team, you know, technically. And I would I wanted us to write our experiences with the Lord. And that changed my life. I didn't know that back then it would be a thing that would become my future.
Right.
You know, because I love leading worship. I wasn't necessarily in love with writing at the time.
Yeah.
And so I was writing a ton. I would write through the night. I would write through the morning. In the middle of the day, just writing. Everything I feel about God, everything. And different people started to call me. You know, Bethel was amongst 10 record labels calling me for songs. I would post covers, and I did like a little album. Like, I call it a mixtape.
Yeah.
'Cause really, it was the cheapest album I've ever made. And I was just trying to be obedient to God, didn't know what I was doing, and I made it. And people just called me. I didn't really know who hand to shake, because I wasn't looking for that stuff. You know what I mean? I really was happy in my life. And I ended up somehow at Bethel. And I signed my first record deal with Bethel. And soon after Bethel, I started the group Maverick City. And this is stuff I didn't want.
Yeah.
You know, I didn't want this. You know what I mean? I definitely had dreams and aspirations of being a worship leader to the nations, but I didn't have context for what that looks like, because I was never, you know, around. My mom wasn't that, or my sister or my cousin. You know, I didn't have any examples of that. So I just thought it was more simple than what it was. But that's kind of how I got into it, is writing. Songwriting got me into those arenas. And then when I would sing my demos, you know what a demo is?
Yeah.
So I would sing my own demos, and then that's what got me, landed me deals with my voice. But,
When I called you, when we talked that, I don't know, someday after that concert, you kind of gave that rundown, and we talked about the helping out with worship at Man Camp, and you said, "Yeah, man, that was your roots." You said leading worship in the woods with guys in rehab. You said that was like your roots. I was like, "Really? Ding, ding,
bro,
ding. Who needs Chandler Moore? Chandler Moore? Give me the guy."
The toughest white and black guys I led in worship.
Yep.
These guys don't even cry. Like my assistant is sitting right here because he was in the same ministry with me. And like literally, bro, these guys don't cry. My pastor, Papa Donnie, who I call Papa Donnie, he's definitely a second father to me.
Yeah.
He's the one that helped me when I was homeless, trying to chase my dream, you know, and all that stuff.
Oh, when you were homeless.
I was homeless. Like my mom told me to start saying it like this, because my mom hates when I say that. I didn't want to go back home to North Carolina. I wanted to fulfill the purpose on my life. I was very independent child. And even though I had super good parents and stuff, I wanted to make something of myself, and I didn't feel comfortable leaving ministry school and going back home. You know, I wanted to, you know, do something with myself, start a family, do whatever, you know what I mean? And so my point is, like, I lived in Alabama, and I was a part of a church. It was rednecks. It was like the toughest thug black guy. Like, and I had to lead them out. This is past the rehabilitation center. This is like real life now. These people aren't even recovering necessarily, but we all are. But you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And I led them for years while I was on Maverick City. So when I was leading worship in arenas, I would go back home to sing for maybe 20 people at church. Very little storefront church.
That's cool. That shows the heart. I love that. Yeah. Well, I think that what you'll see when you come to Man Camp, as I explain it to people, that no one really understands it till you get there. There's a kind of guy, kind of aggressive guy, that comes to Man Camp that doesn't go to Christian conferences. This is not an outdoor men's conference where you're trying to save on hotel costs or something like that. There's a different kind of dude that comes and is willing to strip away all of his name brand gear, strip away, no one knows how much money he makes. You don't know how much money anybody makes. Unless you really understand gear, you might understand, oh, he's got the expensive stuff. Most people look the same. Everyone walks in the same. Everyone has the same experience. There's no VIP thing. There's no nothing. It's just dudes who have a couple things in common. One is we all have our warts, every last one of it. We all have our challenges. And everyone who shows up, they want a little more than what they have. They want more. If God real, I want more of God. Is God real? Then I want God. They just want more. And I feel like your story is one that's more relatable to the average guy than many people's story. Like when I hear young worship leaders sing that song, I searched the world and it couldn't fill me. You haven't searched the world. You're freaking 25. You haven't been outside of the southeastern United States. You haven't searched the world. But when I start to interact with people who are like, no, I've been like homeless. No, I've been like hanging out with drug people. No, I've been.
My parents were drug dealers.
Were they really?
Yeah.
Were they good at it?
Very good at it. Like wow. we were raised great and we had a good life. And I didn't know they were drug dealers.
Wow.
Until I feel like it was too late when I found out. But really? You know what I mean? Because my mama was like 2 years later, she ended up quitting and like going back to working as a nurse and all that stuff. But like at the time, I didn't know years and years and years. And so I was raised, you know, across the street from the trap. That's where they used to sell.
And they didn't get convicted. They just quit.
No, my mom did. My dad went to jail.
He did. Okay.
He went to jail and got out when I was 14 and just went back to regular life. And that was amazing, but it was definitely traumatizing. Having my dad every day and then gone. And I think a lot of people look at drug dealers as bad people. And sure, like, it's not like something I think is commendable, but my parents were really just good to me, my brother, sister. They were just very good to us. And we genuinely didn't know. And they felt like they were giving me a better life because they didn't graduate high school. Right. You know what I mean? And so they were making money like they did. And they just got my mom explains it like, and she would definitely condone what I'm about to say, but like my mom explains it like she said she was addicted to how fast the money was and how quick she can like fix stuff. So she could fix like anything that was going on in the house or like if her kids needed something, she like, oh, I can go buy the school supplies. Like, you know, and so she was addicted to how fast it was. And that's how I was raised. Yeah.
I could completely see that.
That's why I didn't feel like I fit in when I was becoming a Christian artist. Like I was raised in church just like they were, but I always felt kind of judged. And I think people didn't understand me.
Because your parents were drug dealers?
I feel like people didn't understand me just because I wasn't raised to be like politically correct all the time. And so I had to learn that. And I'm still learning that. But in my house, my mom and dad really allowed us to express ourselves. Like we got spankings and stuff, but a lot of times my parents would, why would you do that? Like, okay, what made you do? Like, it was like therapy every day. And I think a lot of the kids that are in worship now who are amazing weren't necessarily raised practical like that. Mm-hmm. It was more, they had this spiritual thing that was happening even when they were young. Like I went to church when I was younger and stuff, and my grandparents were pastors, but my parents were very practical with me. So I think when I use that tool in the worship space, sometimes people can get really offended. You know, and I'm learning that.
The tool in the worship space. What tool in the worship space?
Just the practical, just being practical and asking questions and acquiring things. And, you know, I run my marketing team. I run the distro team. I run my booking agent. Like, so most artists don't do all that, but I like literally am in every meeting concerning myself. And you know, the artist being the bad guy sometimes in a meeting is just not fun for people, you know? And so I had my moments in the industry when I probably stepped on toes because of a bad deal or something like that. And it was because of my parents and how they raised me to be a good person and to acquire, like, they ask questions and get answers, you know what I mean? And stuff like that. And so, yeah.
Yeah, you're making aggressive moves. That's why you're in an aggressive life. You're making an aggressive move of actually managing your life, actually managing your career. I meet and interact with pastors all the time of every size church that feels like they just need to preach, teach, and give vision. No, you need to be like in the weeds. You got to get in the weeds of your life and of your ministry. In the weeds is where there's little itty bitty oak trees that are starting to come up. You got to protect them in the weeds. In the weeds, there's things that need to be eradicated. You got to get That's in. So you got to make the aggressive move to actually be in there and be involved and not just passively hope and assume everything's going to be okay. It's not.
That's good. I hope they heard you. Yeah. I hope y'all heard him. That was actually very good. That's what I just said, but he explained it better. Like the weeds, bro. Like only you would, things that only you care about. Not just some random guy that's an executive. Like only things that you care about. And that's perfect right there. I'm actually going to take that, what you said.
Yeah, there you go. That's a BT original. A lot of stuff isn't. That's one of them. So these difficult things you've had, Dante, how do you think that contributes to the texture and depth of your artistry?
I think the things I've gone through, and I wouldn't say difficult. Like, I've had difficult moments in my life. Like, I've had difficult moments, and I'm talking about those now.
Yeah.
But I've had a lot of good moments, too. I just genuinely think being raised in the South, where we had, like, four stoplights in Rockingham, North Carolina, it was very simple. We all went to the same high school, Richmond. We only had one high school. Hmm. And so, it was a very simple life. I think my music is that of redemption, struggle, pain. And I think it had everything to do with the way I write music, my upbringing, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And seeing my mom and dad divorce was crazy to me.
Mm.
They know how I feel about that. And it was crazy. It was crazy, you know, thing for them to break up. You know, I didn't love that season of my life. And
how long ago was that they broke up?
They broke up when I was 13. Yeah. And we lost everything that day. Like when it was final, like we lost everything. So my mom pawned my TV, my bed. She sold the house, and I came home from school. I was like, "Where?" I never told this story before. Oh Lord, the podcast. I started telling stuff, but this is a great story. But I came home and I'm like, "Mom, where's our stuff?" I was really mad, and she's like, "We're going back. We're gonna live with Grandma, and we're gonna figure this thing out." And she was cussing. I don't want to say the stuff she was saying. My mom is a seller. And she's like, "I'm not gonna let anybody walk over me and walk over you guys, and we're gonna da da da." And like, she just felt like she wanted to have better for herself. And we had to give up as kids. We had to give up all of our stuff, you know, the monetary value, like the things that don't really matter. But as a kid, it really did matter to us.
Man.
And so she had to give away all of our nice things. So she could start over and have money. And we went back to live with my grandma. And that was, to me, the beginning of Dante Bo. When I started living with my grandma, because that's when I started became the worship leader for my church at that time, because I was always around her. I just hung out with my grandma. Like, my grandma's my hero. And she's the first real Christian I ever met.
Wow.
And I know a lot of Christians, but she's a real Christian. Like, mm-hmm. she actually loves God. So you've
had a lot of hardship. I got to thank the photo gate one had to be maybe the worst hardship, emotional hardship, with that whole thing that put you on the sideline for a bit. You want to tell us about that? Okay, again, I want to get this out because I feel like dudes, the men who are listening, and women too, but the kind of guys who come to Man Camp, which is really the perfect outcropping of this podcast called The Aggressive Life. There are a lot of folks who are rough and a lot of regrets and a lot of just stuff working out. And you're in the weeds with people on this stuff, which I find inspiring. So take us back there. Tell us about that story and how you're doing right now.
Yeah, I'm doing great. I mean,
are you going to upset me? Am I asking this?
I'll going touch like, on
damn,
the photo.
Man, I don't want to freaking talk about this again.
And I'll touch on the photo, yeah. Pastor Brian, because you are cool.
It's just Brian.
Like, I don't feel, you just seem like people I know. Yeah. You just feel like friends that I actually hang out with. But yeah. So what I'm going to say is, so I took the progress photo and you can.
Progress photo of your body. You're working out. Yeah.
And you can use, a lot of kids do, like use Instagram camera because it's better. Some people use TikTok, but I don't. But I accidentally posted it and didn't even think anything of it. It was 2 p.m., by the way. I heard some podcaster say, I just think he was high or maybe drunk or something. No. And I'm not against drinking, but I was not drunk. You know what I mean? And so it was 2 p.m. and I posted it. My somebody from my team called me. I don't know who did it, but I had to think about that. But it said, oh my God, you just did this. I couldn't believe it. My life was over before it was over.
Wow.
Like, and I think I'm so glad I'm talking about it from this place now. Because I've done a lot of interviews where I just didn't like talk about it in depth of how horrible it was for me. And I just kind of like try to brush it off a little bit, but it was actually the worst day of my life. Oh, I was about to say one of, but I think it was the worst day of my life. And I really did take it serious and I really was broken. And it was an accident and it wasn't sent to anybody. Like this is true.
It was an accident. Truth. Yeah. Right. It wasn't sent to somebody.
This is just a
term.
Yeah.
Thing. Yeah.
And so it was like, and I've done stuff that maybe, you know, back then, like being a young 20-something-year-old, like, you know, no ex-girlfriend came out and said something bad about me and stuff like that. So this was really an accident. So I was like, oh my gosh, like I did this. Just, you know, and it broke me. It broke me really bad. It broke me really bad that, you know, my team made a statement or a Maverick made a statement. And shout out to Jen Johnson from Bethel. Cause she said like people kept asking her to make statements and she said, I will never talk about my friend. Like, you know, and I was very, very close to Jen Johnson and Brian Johnson. And they just chose not to speak about me in that way. Mm-hmm. And so I was very broken. I was broken when everybody turned their backs on me. And people say that and they're just being like, what's it called? Like a pity party? Mm-hmm. Pity party. They're having like a pity party. For me, I'm talking about literally, like friends the day before, the next day, not friends with me.
Wow.
And legitimate friends.
Wow.
I was the number one gospel artist in the world and the number four contemporary Christian artist in the world. The first person to ever do that simultaneously, black space and white space. And it broke me down because I really did know my influence and I love my fans, especially the kids. Like, especially the kids. Like, I like the adults too, but they're the ones typing crazy stuff. But like the kids, I thank God that he protected that whole thing and it's not on the internet and the kids didn't have to like be exposed to that. But I was broken about that and I was humiliated, you know, and I wanted to run away and I did. I did run away. And you know, tried to just, you know, heal and find myself in isolation, which didn't really work. It worked. I mean, I was happier, but not happy, like, or satisfied, you know, I was happier, or like, cause I'm like, I was away from all the drama, but yeah. it was just a temporary, satisfaction, nothing that was long-term. And so when the long-term healing happened, it was because I started reconciling with my friends again. And realizing that it's not my fault or their fault that we're not friends anymore necessarily, but sometimes they might not even be strong enough to come talk to me, you know, and I realized that. And so I just reconciled with everyone. And when I say everyone, everyone, that's why I met you. That's why I was on stage with Maverick.
Yeah.
Because of reconciliation.
Well, yeah, well, that's why I thought you were somebody else. I knew you had been kicked out, sidelined, whatever it is, perhaps appropriately for Maverick City. These things are always very complex organizationally, very, very complex. So, you know, you were parked in the sideline for a bit, and I didn't know that you were back in the mix. And so I thought you were somebody else.
Yeah, man, cool. And you know,
okay, that was your first thing back with Maverick City, right?
Second thing. And my friends and my family and the people even in the industry, I'm just one of the nicest people, for real. I really am very chill. I don't really get too crazy. So I just never thought this was going to happen to me. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying? By my own hands. It's not like somebody said something about me. I just did that myself. And it was just hard for me to cope with. You know what I mean? And so anyway, I reconciled with everyone. And they reconciled with me too. Stuff that I didn't even know. You know what I mean? People like reconciled with me because I was in my 20s and I did make a mistake. And people treated me like I was, you know, a 45-year-old man with kids and a wife and just a family. You know what I mean? They treated me that way because I was so, and I hate this word, but I have to say it, famous, Christian famous. And so the anointing can make you look a lot older than you are.
Interesting. Yeah, right. Fascinating. Yeah.
Especially when you're operating in it and you're really focused. You know, you're actually focused on your relationship with the Lord. And I did that. And I think a lot of people just esteemed me higher than I really was. And also felt like I was older than what I was, because 40-year-old men and 40-year-old women were coming to me, asking me advice about the Lord. You know what I mean? And so, I went through that. And God redeemed me, because only He and I knew the truth. And I started having conversations with Him, like, you're going to be the one that have to help me fix this. And you texted me, we've talked a few times, but the last time you texted me, you said, like, what do you think made people get over that? Because now I'm back. I have I have the biggest song in Christian music right now, which I'm just so grateful for. I will say, God bringing me to my knees was the best thing for me, because I'm way more humble and I like the way I feel. I actually like the way I feel now. I was getting haughty at some points, just because, you know, it comes natural if you don't pray it out, you know?
Yeah.
And so, you asked me, what do you think helped people get over that hump of what you did, you know? I'm like, it could have been they just missed me. It could have been the 3 years of a break, like just taking a hiatus.
Was it that long? 3 years? It was that long.
I took a break, and people don't know this. I chose to remove myself. So I could have released and stayed. I was still signed and doing all my stuff, and I was still touring and stuff. But I chose to. And at the time, I didn't know why I was doing it. I felt like it was just because I couldn't deal with the stuff. But I think it was just God, like, just helping me just chill out, just chill for a minute. And, you know, I was in therapy every Monday, you know, because it wasn't even about the picture. That was not even for real. Like, that wasn't a salacious thing. Like, it wasn't meant to be that. So it just led me to go to therapy for other things and a lot of other things, you know, and going through healing and stuff about, you know, my life and things that I've experienced and stuff like that. And it was a glorious year. And then I was like, I'm not releasing any music. You know, last year, I'm like, not releasing any music. I'm fine. You know, I was just living my life, country boy, chilling, just hanging out with my friends. And I loved it. And my friend Amber went through something incredibly horrible. Like, and she loved my song Grateful. And she said, can you release this? People need this. And so a lot of people don't know this story. That's the only reason I released my first song back. it wasn't because of a label or a strategy and or me just feeling like, oh, God will accept me again. Like, no, I did not think that. I just released it because she is like really, her and Aaron, they're a married couple, but they're my really close friends. And they convinced me to drop my first Christian song back after years of no Christian music. And that went viral. And I don't think it was because of how popular I am. I don't. I really do think, because I had no marketing dollars. I did all the videos myself. And now I do everything myself. I used to have a big team, not anymore. And I had no marketing. And I just dropped it. And God really breathed on it. And I think he just wanted me to know that it was always me. Like, you're cool. You're cool, but you're cooler with me, you know? And I've experienced that this year, and I'm not trying to be like super deep or not like that. It's the truth though.
Yeah.
I've spent a ton of money on marketing on my songs. I've done all the things and to get where I was, but this year and last year when I dropped Grateful, I haven't done any marketing. I literally just dropped music from my heart. And I hope that it does well, you know, but you know, they tell you it's not gonna do well because you're not playing the game, but I'm okay with posting all my own social media content. It takes up a lot of my time and I did not like doing that back in the day. And so I had a social media person and stuff like that, but I think it's time for me to be close to my supporters. I think it's time for me to be closer to them. And time for me to be who I always wanted to be. You know what I mean? Just a humble guy who, you know, I'm still rough.
Right.
I'm a real guy.
Yeah, you're rough. You can't say
I'm
prostitution.
I'm a real guy, bro.
I know. You even say the word prostitution. You are so rough. So rough.
I didn't know of you. No, I'm joking, no. But yeah, bro. I'm still a guy, but
yeah.
I definitely am working on being more tender, and it's only through that photo. I'm not gonna lie. God used that to
like that photo, yep.
to shut me up and sit me down a little bit and like teach me about myself. Because I don't think I would have done it if I would have just stayed on the high. Anyway.
Well, that classic Bible verse, Romans 8:28, God causes all things to work together for good for those who love him or are called according to his purpose. He causes all things to work together for good. That another way to say that is that God never wastes anything. He doesn't waste anything. So that photo that you did, that post that you did, certainly a mistake, not a sin. A mistake is not a sin necessarily, but you know, just whatever, bad thumbs, whatever. But hey, God said, hey, I'm not going to waste this. I'm going to deepen Dante right now.
And people get so offended with that word sin, but I used to too. I used to get offended with that. And now I'm not, because I feel like I was sinful. And now I'm not hung up on that word. Yeah. Or when people would say, come home, I just get so mad. Like, I'm like, I just prayed to Jesus like this morning. Like, I literally talked to Jesus. While I was not releasing music, I was still very much Christian. So I used to get offended with the come home until I started dropping more music 3 years later. And I realized, like, no, I wasn't home. I really wasn't. I was a Christian, but I had forsaken my purpose for sure.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't know if I would ever go back to it. I wasn't thinking that I would go back to it. And so even with the sin thing, I think the photo was an accident 1,000%. But it's just I feel like God used that instead of my sinful nature. It was an accident. And even though people might not believe that, but it was. And he could have used my childhood. You know, he could have used different stuff, like, you know, to be on blast. And he just really is good to me. And it helped me, you know, in my 20s to work it out and get it together.
Yeah, I mean, you've had the highs, the lows of the lows. You're homeless. And then 3 years later, 2022, you've got 5 Grammy nominations. Is that what it was? 5, you know?
The first person in history in gospel music, Christian music.
boom, boom, right? And then, and now here you are, you're that extremes again of you are off and out of your day job, and then boom, boom, unmarketed song just kind of takes off. You're in these extremes. Are you doing okay with that? Or are you getting whiplash?
I love how you said that. That is so good. It's a great interview. I don't know why, like, highs, really high highs and really low lows. I'd be asking God, I have to do my country lingo with that. Like, I really be asking God, like, why me? I don't want this. Like, I do want to, of course, everybody wants to be successful and everybody wants to have, you know, their dreams come true and things like that. I didn't ask for that level of success. I'm like, bro, like, I'm not trying to be CC Winans or whoever, you know, I'm not trying to be that, you know? And, but he, I don't know, like, he chose me, and I think I write good, but there's a lot of people that write good. Mm-hmm. And so I don't know why he brought up the Grammy thing. I don't know why he wanted me to be the first person in history. Cause they don't even acknowledge me as the first person in history to do that in Christian music. So I'm like, I don't know why he wanted me to do all these things and be all these things that he gave me, because I did not work for it. All I did was just write songs, sing, and anybody that knows me knows I am simple, bro. Like, I literally hang out with the same friends. They're tattooed on my arm. The same five guys are still my friends to this day. I don't have a ton of friends and stuff like that. And so I just like hanging out with them. And I that was my MO. I really thought if I worked hard enough, I can like hang out with my friends whenever I wanted and maybe travel the world and stuff like that. And I just did not think that he would put me in the forefront as far as he did. And then I did that photo. I didn't think I would have that drop.
Right.
You know, and then come back and be right now, like, just a million streams in 4 days. I think there were 1.8 million streams in 4 days.
Wow.
I'm just like, oh, right. I'm not trying to do none of this. Like, I like making music and stuff like that. And I like making swamp music. That's what I call it. Swamp music.
Swamp music?
Yeah, because my voice is all raspy and rough. But like, and people just eat it up. And I'm grateful for it, but I'm not going to lie. It's probably the first time my supporters hear me say this, but I did not care about doing that. A lot of these artists go into meetings, they want to be famous for real. Like, I just did not care about that. I thought maybe I could make a couple bucks and take care of my friends and family. And but I was in for a rude awakening, yeah. Bro, when I was with Bethel and Maverick City. I did not plan that at all. There's no way to even get to that point. You know what I mean?
Well, the money made is off songwriting, right? It's not off of performing. Is that right?
Yeah, most of the money, well, the actual money is in publishing, which is songwriting.
Okay.
And then you have like performance credits and stuff like that, performance credit, yeah. And then you have your writers, which is like the publishing side of things. But if you are a writer, you make a ton.
Yeah.
A ton of money. And I was BMI songwriter of the year. Mm. Gospel and contemporary Christian. Like, I got both plaques for that. And wow. I it's just because I stay up all night writing.
What instruments?
It's not because I'm trying to be famous, huh?
What instruments do you play?
Only piano.
Piano, okay. Well, that's the core instrument right there.
Yeah, play piano. My grandma bought me a Yamaha piano when I was like 10, 11. And so I just taught myself how to play it enough, and I played to write, and I played on stage a few times, but I don't do it like that.
Yeah. Dante, I think you're the kind of guy who could handle something that I don't give everybody the opportunity to get into this next round and final round as we come around the corner. I'm gonna introduce you to the lightning round. The lightning round. Okay. Is where I give you a topic and you have to answer it like a flash of lightning, like a sentence or so.
All right, gotta go fast.
Can you do this? You don't have to speak fast.
I can do it. Let's go.
And I'll tell you, very few people are good at this. I'll tell you who was really great at this years ago, which I'm not trying to set a high bar here, was Lecrae. He chose to have all of his answers rhyme. They all rhymed. You remember that? They were so good. I didn't even know he was doing that until about the sixth question. He was like writing a song. I don't need anything that artsy. If you want to do that, fine. But here we go. Are you ready? Are you up for the lightning challenge?
I am up, and I'm trying to outdo Lecrae. So all right. I'm competitive. So let's
good.
See.
All right, here we go. If someone hasn't heard your music and you only get one song to give an introduction, what would you recommend?
Voice of God.
Voice of God. Aggressive move you've made lately, and what you've learned from it.
Running my entire company, and I've learned that you get a lot more done. You might be tired, but you get a lot more done, and you keep your integrity because there's nobody messing with stuff.
Dirt, Dante's doing well here. He's actually, we haven't heard from you yet, Dirt. Where are you?
Yeah, right. You don't need me. You got Dante freaking
I'm killing it. I told you.
He's ringing the bell. He's like obeying the lightning round rules and everything.
Who's Lecrae?
Right.
Question mark?
Who's Lecrae? Yeah, right. Right. Okay. Worship artists, past or present, that you admire?
Oh, Tasha Cobbs Leonard.
Yeah. What's happened with her? She would pop up my stuff all the time. I haven't heard anything from her for a while now.
No, she's still out there. You know, she has a baby now.
Okay.
And she got married, and then she's a pastor at a church, and then she has a sneaker store, like Athletic Foot. So you probably see a little less than when she was just doing music, but she's still out there, and that's my mentor. That's who stayed kind of, her and Pastor Kenny, which is her husband, like stayed by my side the entire process.
Oh, that's cool. That's very cool. So, all right, a few more here in the lightning round. The secret to writing a great worship song.
Oh, heart.
Heart.
It's not about the chorus. It's not about the bridge per se. It's not about the verse per se. It's about your heart. So when I was writing I Thank God with my friends, they were like, we need a bridge, Dante. And sorry, but I'm just going to say it. I was on the toilet at the time. So they were like FaceTiming.
Cannot use the T word here. You cannot say the toilet T-word. Here.
You've been out, actually. Let people guess what I'm saying. No, but I was on the toilet, and I was crying to the song. It was a slow song at the time. And then, I don't know, I just, hell lost another one. I am free. I am free. Hell lost another one. Get up out of that grave. And it wasn't something I had to think of. So I haven't written on paper in a while.
Wow. That was on the taking a dump. That's fantastic.
Taking a dump.
Jeez.
Made that bridge.
I met a pastor years and years and years and years ago. He said his greatest times of prayer was when he was taking a dump.
I mean, because when you're taking a dump, bro, like, it's the most personal, like, space you get. I mean, especially when you got a family and friends, or if you got a staff.
Well, that's true. You're locked away in privacy.
You're locked away privately, and I'm never locked away privately unless I'm taking a dump or, like, I'm sleeping in my bedroom, but you know what I mean? But, like, yeah, it's something that I get a lot of work done, especially if I really got to sit down for a little while.
Well, this guy's theory was that it also is a time when you felt most human. You were a creature because, you know, the gods, the quote unquote gods, they don't have to do that. But only things have been created have to take a dump. And he felt like it got him in touch with his humanity that enabled him to connect with God that way. One guy's story. Interesting.
That's great.
All right. A couple more here. These are so good here. But
what about
just
farting
more here.
And burping and stuff like that? That makes you feel human too?
Well, the thing is, you know, when you're farting or burping, it's just so enjoyable to do it, so you really can't think of anything else.
It is enjoyable.
Who doesn't like to smell their own farts?
Yeah.
I mean, you know,
a stomach ache is like, no.
everyone says, oh, that's disgusting. Unless it's yours, then it's not.
Yeah, then it's not disgusting.
That's not disgusting. Someone else who's finally admitted this. This is man.
It's only disgusting when it's not yours. When it's yours, you're like, I can do this.
Nobody else is even average. Everyone else is F-. Doesn't matter who they are. No, F-. You know, Jennifer Lawrence, no, F-. Brad Pitt, F-. No, they're all horrible. Every last one of them. But no, yours. It's always grade A. Always.
Yes, okay. Sir. Yes, sir.
All right. What's the last one? What's the last risk you took and did it pay off?
Oh, going back to Christian music for sure. Not knowing if people would even like me.
Yeah.
But well, that on top of standing on stage with Maverick, like after like not being with Maverick for so long, that's pretty, yeah, that's a lot. Like, that's probably the last risk I took.
Yeah, man. Well, your risks have been well taken, and I'm really impressed with your heart. I'm impressed with the path that you're on. I'm impressed with just your perspective and all that. And I can't wait to freaking camp with you. It's gonna
be impressed with you too, though. And I don't like talking to preachers and stuff, like, or people that run conferences and stuff. You're like, when I met you at the conference or at the concert, Lauren Daigle thing, you just got a cool energy. You talk about being human, and you feel human, and you reach out to me. You didn't just book me for the conference or just, you know, or
not the conference, the man camp.
The man camp.
Yes.
Conference.
Oh. You did it. It's not an outdoor conference.
Please edit that.
There's no other time where you're going to be sleeping and peeing in the woods and then you're on stage.
Yeah,
no other place that is.
It's man camp, not conference. Jeez. But yeah, bro, I'm excited to do it. And I feel like you're just human. And I feel connected to you solely because you reach out to me. And this is the season of my life for real. But you still reach out to me. And you want to know certain things. You call me, you talk to me about my upbringing, you talk to me about what happened with Maverick, you talk to me about, you know, all these different things. And I really do appreciate that, because a lot of people, they don't really care. It's more like a packed event.
Yes.
You know?
Correct. So, well, thanks.
I appreciate you.
Thank you, man. I appreciate that. I have had people go, you're just trying, someone's emptying the garbage outside.
Literally, yeah, the garbage man is outside.
Yeah, I don't try to be the shock pastor. I don't do that. I don't do any of that stuff for theatrics. I'm just trying to be me and just saying what comes to my mind and having fun with it. And I find that a lot of people appreciate that. And those that don't, that's fine. You don't have to. But for a lot of folks, that's the language that we speak. And I'm just happy to speak it and be who I am, and yeah, Thankful that God lets me be who I am. It's good stuff.
Yeah, you're just a wild man, honestly. Mm-hmm. That's how I see you. Like, you love God. Like, you love Jesus. And you're a wild guy. Like, when I saw what you were inviting me to, I'm like, what the heck, bro? Like, this is so my, and you're like, I don't know, are you sure this is the right fit? I'm like, bro, this is my lane. The guys will love me, like, for real. Like, you know, and I just look at you like a wild man. Like, you're doing something that's just, like, kind of wild to me, you know? And it's not easy to get a bunch of men together to have communion, first of all, because most men are working and doing all this stuff. And then, second of all, to worship and, like, listen to things that make their lives better. Listen to messages that make their lives better. And so it's cool that you have that many guys wanting to be that vulnerable.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah, there is. They come wild from a long way away. I had 7 countries last year, 41 states. And I don't think everybody knows what they're walking into when they come. But everyone, when they get there, they go, this is a different deal. I'm actually around a campfire having a conversation. I'm having a campfire, having a beer if I want to have one, and I'm not ostracized. Yeah. I'm out, or two, or however many you're going to have, or three. But it's it's a thing where you can be a guy. You can be a guy who's trying to experience life and encounter God instead of check the box of what a Christian guy should do.
Exactly.
That's not what it is. And that's stifling. It's stifling, and it has stifled the average man in America, which is why there's more women who go to church than men.
For sure. My assistant / best friend, Deborah, was like, hey, do you want to camp? Do you want me to see about a hotel around the area? I'm like, man, we're camping.
Hell yeah, we are.
We're camping, dude. Like, we're camping. It is what it is. Like, if we're going to be there, we're going to camp. Like, we're going to hang out. Like, I want to be involved. I want to experience it. You know what I mean? Right. Yeah, man.
And I'll take care of you, because I'm gonna get all your stuff for you. You're gonna have grade A stuff. You're gonna be shocked at how comfortable you can actually be camping. So it's good.
Glamping.
It's not quite glamping. Glamping is kind of a hard floor with some HVAC unit. No, you're going to be down on the ground, but it's going to be a nice little blow up air mattress. I'm going to set you up, man. It's okay.
Set me up, bro. Make sure it's nice.
No, it'll be
nice as tent.
As far as camping, it's going to be nice. You're going to be in good shape. I actually sleep better when I'm camping than I do in my bed. If you have the right gear, that's the way it's going to work. Yeah. Yeah. Nice. So you'll find out. All right, man. Hey, is there anything else you want to talk about that we didn't talk about? Or anything else you want to promote we haven't promoted?
No, man. I just want to pray with you. And then that's it.
Hey, I'm about ready to cry. Of all the years we've done this, I haven't had anybody say, I would just like to pray for you to end the podcast.
Really?
Why don't you pray and that'll be the end, all right?
Yes. Oh, Jesus, thank you so much for my new brother, my new friend. God, I ask that you would exceed his expectations of this conference. God, blow his mind. God, I ask that everyone that comes, God, they will feel your presence. They will feel love. They will feel protected. They will feel a sense of community and ease. Holy Spirit, I ask, God, that you would take his vision, everything that you've given him, all this vision that he has, God, and I ask you to just multiply it, God, because men need it, God. So I ask you to just multiply it, God, grow it in a way that it feels authentic to his calling and what he actually wanted it to be. Don't make it so commercial. And God, I ask you to just bless him, his family, everybody attached to him, his friends, more than they could ever imagine. In Jesus' name, amen.
Amen. Amen. It's not a conference. You even prayed to the Holy Father, the conference. It's not a conference, Dante. God understands your heart. He does. And I do too.
You know what? I'm so used to saying conference. I don't even like saying that word.
Yeah, no offense
to people that do conferences.
No, I like conferences. I'll go to conferences. I like conferences. Yeah, I do. I like them a lot. That's just not what Man Camp is, which is thing.
Yeah.
Well, dude. I love you. I respect you. I appreciate you. This is, and I'll see you live and in person in about.
Yes, sir. We're going to hang out.
It's going to happen. It's going to happen. And I'll get to all your list of your favorite things you want to do around the campfire and everything. It's going to be good. So, hey, friends, that's it. I said we're going to close with Dante's prayer. We probably should have closed it there, but we did. And I'll just say this. Dante hit some serious life stuff for us. Serious. It's called The Aggressive Life because we don't want to just think about interesting ideas. We want to do really important stuff. So, man, if you're down, that is not the final chapter. God doesn't waste anything. Keep going. If there's creative breakthroughs you want to have, maybe you need to think about a different place, like your bathroom. I don't know what it is, but he said some powerful things. And why don't you do that and live your life? We'll see you next time on The Aggressive Life. Man Camp 2025 is just around the corner, October 17th and 19th in Southwest Ohio. Thousands of men from all over the literal world are going to be descending on our property, connecting with each other, having fun, laughing, connecting with God, stretching ourselves, pushing ourselves, playing all sorts of things. It's really going to be phenomenal. And this year, man, we have some new things we're doing this year that I want to make sure that you're in on. First off, Bear Grylls, world-renowned survivalist camper. Bear Grylls is going to be with us. He's going to be great. Dante Bowe, Grammy Award-winning artist. Dante is going to be there with us, helping us out with worship. It is going to be an amazing three-day experience. Get off the grid. Push yourself. Try something new. Form some bonds. Form some relationships. Have some hangout time. Have some laughter. We get all that and a lot more at Man Camp. I've got a 15% discount off code for you if you enter podcast15 at checkout, podcast15. You can claim your spot right now and do it quickly at mancamp.us and then invite someone to come with you, and I'll be looking forward to that. Thanks for joining us on this journey toward aggressive living. Find more resources, articles, past episodes, and more at bryantome.com. My new book, a 60-day devotional called The 5 Marks for Man, 60 Days to a Powerful Life, along with all the other books in the 5 Marks library, are open right now on Amazon. Be sure to leave us a rating and review wherever you listen to your podcast. Then send an email to dirt, that's dirt, at briantome.com to get a free Aggressive Life sticker. Find more on Instagram at briantome. The Aggressive Life is a production of Crossroads Church, Cincinnati, Ohio.